for Vinci. Price cars everywhere I go, they follow with their cars. All they do is laugh and send me on my way, just so I can think and find the time to say. All I want is to be just one of the people. Money, just because I'm not so hungry for money. Why won't you just take my place till tomorrow? Let me see the other side, not just sorrow. All I want is to be just one. Understand, I think I can fly now. Someone take my hand and we can both try now. All I want is to be just one of those people. People, people walking down the streets of the city. Color flashing lights and signs on the bridge. Everybody's lying and I'm crying for pity.
Chapter 4, Camped by a Doorway. Most of the Amazon basin is alluvial deposit from the Andes. La Chorrera is different. The river narrows and flows into a crack. It begins to flow very rapidly. Then it flows over an edge, a lip, and there is a waterfall full of power. Not exactly a waterfall, but a chute, not a direct drop. This violent plume has made a sizable lake, very unusual situation for the Amazon. Very rarely can one rise above the treetops, but at La Chorrera there are actually hills, and one can get up some altitude. There were no stinging or biting insects. It is a paradisical place. You push very hard, and suddenly you are there, and it is beautiful. The mist drifting across the pastures, there are white cattle, the mission, the huge lake, the jungle, but white cattle, and therein lies a peculiar twist of the story. The afternoon following our arrival, at the edge of a large pasture cleared at the order of the succession of Spanish priests who had managed Mission La Chorrera since its establishment in the 1920s, I held and turned over in my hand perfect specimens of the same species of mushrooms whose lone representative I had eaten near Florencia. In the pasture before me were dozens of these mushrooms. After examining several, my brother pronounced them Stropharia cubensis, one of the largest, strongest, and certainly the most widely distributed of any of the known psilocybin-containing mushrooms. What to do? Our expedition's thin-down drug and plant file was concerned with flowering plants, not with fungi. We had no data on the proper dosage of psilocybin, but collectively seemed to remember that in the Oaxacan mushroom rituals described by Gordon Wasson, the mushrooms are eaten in pairs, and several pairs are consumed. We determined to eat 6 mushrooms each that same evening. My journal entry for the next day spoke clearly. 23 February 1971. Are we indeed now in some way camped on the edge of another dimension? Yesterday afternoon, Dave discovered Stropharia cubensis in the damp pastures behind the house where we have hung our hammocks. He and I gathered 30 delicious psilocybin-saturated specimens in about half an hour. We all each ate approximately 7 and spent last night on an enormously rich and alive, yet gentle and elusive trip. In between strange lights in the pasture and discussion of our project, I am left with the sense that by penetrating the local psychedelic flora this way, we have taken a giant step toward deeper understanding. Multifaceted and benevolent, as complex as mescaline, as intense as LSD, the mushroom, as is said of peyote, teaches the right way to live. This particular mushroom species is unclaimed, so far as I know, by any Aboriginal people anywhere, and thus is neutral ground in the tryptamine dimension we are exploring. Through this unclaimed vegetable teacher, one can gain entry into the world of the elf chemists. The experience of the mushroom is subtle, but can reach out to the depth and breadth of a truly intense psychedelic experience. It is, however, extremely mercurial and difficult to catch at work. Dennis and I, through a staggered description of our visions, noticed a similarity of content that seemed to suggest a telepathic phenomenon or some sort of simultaneous perception of the same invisible landscape. A tight headache accompanied the experience in its final stages, but this was quick to fade, and body strain and exhaustion often met with in unextracted vegetable drugs is not present. This mushroom is a transdimensional doorway which sly fairies have left slightly ajar for anyone to enter into who can find the key and who wishes to use this power, the power of vision, to explore this peculiar and naturally occurring psychoactive complex. We are closing distance with the most profound event a planetary ecology can encounter, the emergence of life from the dark chrysalis of matter. Such were my impressions after only one exposure to the realm of vision over which the mushroom holds sway. The reference to strange lights in the pasture should be explained, since perhaps it has some bearing on some of what followed. After we had eaten the mushroom and an hour had passed and everyone had become comfortable with the pleasant plateau of hypnagogic imagery, someone initiated a discussion. It was Dave or Dennis. Dennis, I believe. He said that we were now loaded in the home territory of the secret, and so should not remain in the confined space of our dwelling, but move out into the foggy night, the warm enfolding fog over the pasture. Discussion. Not all should go. A delegation. Who should it be? Dennis nominated Dave and myself, calling Dave the least skeptical, me the most. Vanessa objected to me as most skeptical, suggesting instead that Dave and Dennis should go. I heartily agreed, not actually wishing to visit the dark and dewy pasture myself, and having no faith, so skeptical was I, in the transcendental potential of the errand. Off they went, first loudly proclaiming the total enveloping power of the ground fog, and then, in a theatrically absurd short time, and from off stage, hollered out that they saw a hovering diffuse light in the pasture nearby. Investigation pursued. Hollering continues but fades. Light persists. Diffuseness persists.
Let's go over there.
I decided it was time for cooler heads to intervene. Off into the enfolding, wettish night I went. I crossed carefully through the barbed wire, wet to my fingers, but warm seeming even at night, so steamy as Amazonas. Once united with Dave and Dennis, I found the situation far closer to their description than I expected. There was a dim light on the ground a few yards away. It seemed to retreat slightly as one walked toward it. We moved in its direction for several dozen meters in a series of short advances. At that distance we felt far from our companions back at the house and enveloped in dense drifting fog. We can follow this light, but we better not get too far away or we will get lost because we don't know the area at all. It was Dave pleading for a retreat, but we continued to follow it. Sometimes it would seem as though it was just 20 feet ahead of us. It seemed as though it was hovering in the air, but then it seemed as if it had fallen into the grass. The light would come filtering back through the grass. We would run forward, and then it would be ahead again in the air. Finally, we decided to go no farther. As we turned to depart, I seemed to see a flickering in front of the diffuse light that to my mind suggested someone dancing before a fire. Thoughts of UFOs left me, and I recalled instead the ominous incidents preceding our departure from San Jose del Encanto. Was this a shaman dancing around a small fire? Was it something to do with us? No understanding was ever shed on this incident, but the general eeriness of it anticipated all that was to follow. But the words of my journal entry are revealing. I speak matter-of-factly of gaining entry into the world of elf chemists. I call the mushroom a transdimensional doorway and link it to a transformation of life on the planet. A younger, more naive, more poetic self is revealed, a more intuitive self at ease with proclaiming wild unlikelihoods as hallucinogenically derived gnosis. Very little has changed. Then I was eager to be convinced by demonstration, and demonstration was given. I was changed, and was obviously eager to be changed. Now, years later, and with years of reflection on these things, I can still discern, in that earliest experience, many of the motifs that have persisted through the years and remained mysterious. At one point during the evening, Dennis and I both seemed to be able to see and describe the same hallucination. Off and on over the years, this has happened several times with psilocybin, and the wonder of it does not change.
36 weeks commander Q.
36
Commander
Q. 36
Commander Q.
Commander Q.
Spirit
and
no radio, no
with Commander Q.
Not on sewer. This is absolutely because no
Like some general suggestions about how they structure, and then we can talk about we can talk about more specific things like the language diction. I mean, the different tools. The thing is, I'm not interested in being an editor of what I like. I'd like to give you my impression as a reader and also some editor-like suggestions about what do you think about it.
Thank you.
That sounds good. I'll bring my manuscript. What I'd like you to do is, I'd like you to do two things between now and then. I'd like you to
harness yourself to various numbers.
Good. And the other thing is,
read it with fresh eyes. I know you've written it probably a few times, but
between now and then, read it. Try to read it with sort of unfamiliar eyes. So,
stay tuned.
So, you pick it up in the store and look at it. Because I think that quite often the so I suggest that you do that. Try to read it after. Yeah, exactly. And then I think some. I think the string is going to be probably ABC. So that's all right.
Thursday, October 5th, 2000, 9:39 p.m. Ascending the stairs from Malden Center T platform to the main room. Malden, Mass. I think it was good for its lack of conflict with Laura, with anybody, really. For its progress, I managed to push myself through reading the last set of Joe's emendations to North of Jersey against the proof that Barbara sent, and I ended up finding 5 or 6 fixes that are necessary. I have to push myself through one more stage, which is to read the whole thing over from first poem to last to make sure that at this point there are no more changes. It's just proofreading to make sure nothing was missed. I just poured out 2 more pages in the Bags and story I've been working on for weeks and weeks, months now, really. The Edgar B. Bear story. I'm going to take particular pleasure in reading it at the next Jellicle Guild, if Mio's there, because she was there the day I bought Edgar Bear. I don't even know how long ago it was. But it was a while. And it's within a couple of pages of finishing. And what's neat is that it's a story that keeps twisting and turning and in unusual ways. See if I can get some coherence to my description of the day. 9:42, by the way. So I will have my desired hour before going to sleep. One more work day. Well, one more day at work. Let me think. Let me start at the beginning of the day. It was hard to get up this morning. I really struggled. The tea sucked. It really did. It really fucking sucked. I ended up getting the 8:20 shuttle instead of the 8 o'clock. But it was fine. It worked out okay. I talked with Laura from 9-something until 3:30, with gaps in between for lunch and whatever. We didn't fight today. I didn't really push any emotional issues. I didn't want to. There's no point in it anymore, really. I researched Rainbow Family information. I looked a lot at the Lyceum website, psychedelic website, or as they call it, the entheogenic website. I talked with Renee in Seattle, my Burning Man friend. We talked by AOL Instant Messenger. I talked with Jim a little bit, too. We argued about politics. He supports Gore primarily to keep George W. Bush Jr., whatever the hell his name, out of the White House. And I think at one time I would have sympathized at least somewhat with that. But I don't anymore. I can't. For what little I give a damn about politics. And it's a little. I espouse radical politics. If I belong to a party, it would be the Green Party. No doubt. Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, no. The only one that comes close for me is the Green Party. I didn't go to the rally on Sunday, though. But I was there to see Almost Famous at the movie theater. And that meant just as much. I'm glad I went to that instead. I was still tripping when I saw that movie. It was perfect. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful experience. Let's see. Well, I wanted to go to the 1369 Coffee House, but I learned something about that place. And that is, if you don't get there by about 7, you'll find that every table is taken for the rest of the night. People who go there spend the evening there. It's not huge. I went over to Carberry's Coffee House. They closed at 8. It was 10 of 8. I left about 5 of. I walked over to Starbucks. It's all taking place in Central Square, Cambridge, by the way. Walked over to Starbucks. They closed at 8. I ended up sitting in the area that covers the exit escalator to the Central Square T-stop. But that was fine. It was not cold, and it was dry, and I sat there and read. I read the Phoenix, the Weekly Dig, and the USA Today. Pieces of the USA Today and the Phoenix, and all the Dig, though. It wasn't really as interesting this week as it has been. But still, it's become a regular reading habit for me. Weekly Dig in the Boston Phoenix. It has partly to do with there being free, and partly to do with there being frequent, but not too frequent, and partly to do with the fact that they're pretty good for contemporary journalism. Enjoy them. I never thought I'd read anything having to do with anything having to do with news on a regular basis again. But the thing about the Phoenix is that it's not daily news, and it's at least somewhat radical, which is good. And the writing is often pretty good, though not always. But often enough that there's a shot that it might be. I've been thinking about my plan to move. There was a catalyzing moment today. I was talking to this fellow named Steve at Land's End, who's going to be in San Francisco, in part, to see the fish shows this weekend. And I told him I really needed acid. And he said he's going to get me some, which is just so amazing. I think it's in part he appreciates that he got his friend a ticket to the fish show at Hartford Civic Center last December. But that's just, I mean, I had an extra. There wasn't anything strange or whatever about that. But I don't know. Sometimes people are touched in ways that can't be understood. Even if you ask, they can't explain. I see it over and over again. Along Lincoln Street and Anthony's restaurants full of cars and people. Old people. Hugging old people. Oh, whatever. Okay, so this is what I came to about moving. This kid's telling me about Haight-Ashbury acid. And I'm remembering something I always know, but I think I try not to think about at times. And that is that San Francisco is the epicenter of psychedelia. Still. Even though Fish is from Vermont, the thought of Fish playing in San Francisco just blows me away. I mean, it's great. Thank you. can understand why they're ending their tour there. It's not only because it's the West Coast port of their gig, but of their tour, but just, I don't know, it's kind of neat. And so San Francisco, which had lost much steam in my on my list of choices for moving out west, suddenly I was reminded about what it is, what it's been historically, not just psychedelics, but just rebellion in general. Cranks and politicos and revolutionaries and artists. San Francisco has meant a hell of a lot in the history of the counterculture, going way the hell back. It was founded by people outside the mainstream, and it retains that aura. And I think it retains a lot of the truth. And I'd been thinking about Portland when I talked to Larla this weekend, who lived there. She said, well, Portland's dark a lot of the time. Not dark, she said misty, overcast, rainy. I think San Francisco is too. I don't know. San Francisco. Of course. And if I go there, it's a big city, which means they have jobs, which means I use it as a moving, a jumping off spot for other places. Just getting to the West Coast, I've made it into such a monumental thing, I probably could do it a lot easier than I'm believing that I can. But, I want to be ready. When I moved to Boston, all I basically had was a lease for an apartment and an acceptance letter to a graduate English program. And I don't think I want to do that this time. I think I want to have people nearby. It's an expensive city, but I live in an expensive city. I guess the more I think about it, the more I think San Francisco is back on the top of my list. I'd kind of forgotten about it somehow. Now I'm remembering. And now I'm just mulling taking a trip out there again. And it's been 5 years. It was 5 years ago that I last went there. 5 years this past July. That's a long time. A lot of who I am and who I've become has happened in the last, I guess it's basically the last 2.5 years, right? When did my first trip? It was April of 97. It had to be April of 97, yeah. April of 98? No, I went back to school in September of 97. Yeah, so April of 97, October 2000. That's 3.5 years. The last 3.5 years have been a quantum leap forward. I date it from LSD and leaving quantum books. I date it from those events, those experiences. Anyway, if indeed April of 97, if I kind of call that that whole period, everything since, I mean, I've been in a phase. It really began in January of 97, I think, because that's when I renewed my reading about the 60s. By the time April came around, I was so primed to trip. I didn't know I was going to trip, but I did, and I still can remember it all vividly. It's funny that Harley's been in touch with me lately. My original acid guru. I'd like to see him. I'd like to talk to him. I'd like to see Rick. I don't really want to spend a bunch of time talking with Rick about bullshit. I don't really care, frankly. about it all. What it comes down to is that the spirits in 97, when I was 33, shit began to seriously change. I mean, I could trace it back further, but no, I would say 97, spring of 97, 3.5 years ago now, was when things began to happen seriously. Major events began to happen that would lead me to where I am now. Thinking about San Francisco as the epicenter of psychedelia, and historically an important place for art, American art, Kerouac and Ginsberg and their crew transplanted to San Francisco and considered it, in a way, a second home for a lot of their productive lives. And, I wasn't ready for it back then. I'm not saying I'm ready for it now, but I think I'm more ready for it than I was. Portland sounds cool. And Portland may be where I go eventually. But San Francisco, it's kind of like Boston. There's Boston and New York. There's San Francisco and Los Angeles. Well, I wouldn't even think about Los Angeles. It's not my kind of place. And I would think about San Francisco completely. But I want to do this right. I might as well admit, Portland, having it nearby, having it a drive away would be cool, and maybe it would turn out a place that I would want to move to, but I want to move to San Francisco. Wow. How long has this been brimming in my head? I don't know. But now I feel it the way I felt the feeling for Boston. At least I feel it at this moment. And I think I'll be feeling it more and more. All right. It's funny, now I want to tell someone. I told the spirits. They probably already knew as much as they know or care. I'm in so much better mood tonight. Today was so much better, and I wrote tonight. And I just like to write one more page. I don't know. It's all interesting. I want to move to San Francisco. I want to move to San Francisco, spirits. That's where I need to go. That's where I need to be. I need to visit there between now and the time I do the way I did with Boston. And I need to figure shit out. With the internet, it'll be a lot easier. Being in touch with people I've met who live there. A lot of things can happen. I want to move there. I have to figure it out. All right, I said it aloud. I now have a place. That's good. I'm excited. I was tired of thinking about it. The answer was there all along. With Boston, I established my literary roots. I did what I had to do here. there's still work to be done, but being here was necessary and important. Stage and growth and development. And I'll still be here for a while. I mean, I'll be getting up ugly ass early tomorrow morning and passing through the city to get to the job, which I'm going to keep, and the house, the home, which I'm going to keep. I'm going to keep them all until I leave. But I am going to leave. That's good. That's good. I need to find out a million things. I need to find out a million things to make this work. And I need gobs of fucking money.
Trees.
All right. So, today's one of those quantum leap days. I've had them, and they don't always stick. They don't always stick. But I don't think this was a day of coming up with things out of thin air. I think this was a day of confronting what I want. And what I want is to live in San Francisco by September of 2002. Between now and then, I want to accomplish a move that will take me, for the first time, to a living place that is in no way an easy journey back to my original home. I think I may end up old and in New England again, but for now, I've got to go further out. Alright, that's it for now. Peace.
36 with Commander Q.
36 with Commander Q.
36 with Commander Q.
Returning to our friends, we learned that in the few hours that we had been gone, some teachers expected to arrive to teach in the mission school had finally appeared, They had been ferried in by a bush pilot, the notorious George Salikas, who served as La Chorrera's emergency link to the outside world and who brought the mail once a month. We were out of lodging, for it had been the professore's quarters that we had been staying in. Not precisely out of lodging, the priest having offered us the temporary use of a run-down hut that stood on stilts on a small rise below the mission, but well above the broad lake that is caused by the Choro, which gave La Chorrera its name. The word means narrow channel or chute. It was in this small hut, instantly christened the Knoll House, that we proposed to live while we arranged to move further into the nearby jungle and away from the somewhat confining atmosphere of the mission. We rested, passed a joint around, and planned our next move. In conversations with the brother, Dave and Vanessa had learned that there was a quite sturdy Witoto house unused and lying down the trail toward the village where our hopes for Ukuhe centered. It normally stood empty, but was now occupied by the people who had brought their children to the mission for the beginning of the school year. It is the practice of the Witoto to leave their children in the keeping of the padres for 6 or more months out of the year, the effect of which on the social self-image of the children is easily imagined. Children were coming from all directions, being brought by their parents, who would then return to their own villages until time to reclaim the children. These times of gathering at the mission at the beginning and end of the school year are high points of the Witoto social swirl and an excuse for soccer games and night bailes, for the Witoto are inveterate dancers. We were in the midst of such a gathering time, but in a few days all the families would leave and there would be ample empty housing in the jungle. Dave, Dennis, and Vanessa had already inspected one place and determined it to be ideal, close to good insect and plant collecting, and definitely in the jungle itself. We transferred our equipment to the Knoll House and reslung our hammocks. It was cramped, but would do until we could move into the forest. Then, almost in a collective motion, we set out in the early afternoon to the pasture behind the mission. Find the mushrooms. That was the thought on everyone's mind. We returned at evening to the house, each with 6 or 8 carefully chosen specimens. These we ate, and then, as the evening's trip deepened, we smoked joints rolled out of shavings of the freshly gathered Banisteriopsis kapi. The kapi smoke was delicious. It smelled like light incense, and each toke synergized beautiful slow-motion volleys of delicate hallucinations, which we immediately dubbed vegetable television. Each burst of imagery would last about 15 minutes and subside. Then it was time to take another hit of the kapi smoke. The effects persisted a couple of hours. We triggered it repeatedly and excitedly discussed it as an example of the sort of things that sophisticated shamanic technicians have been whipping up for each other's amazement since the late Paleolithic. Our conversation drifted toward and around the possibilities of violations of normal physics and the psychological versus naive realist views of shamanic phenomena, especially the obsidian liquids that ayahuasqueros are said to produce on the surface of their skins and used to look into time. The question of whether or not such things are possible is actually a more gut issue in disguise. The issue of whether what we moderns have remaining to learn about the nature of reality is really not very much and will require only light fine-tuning of our way of looking at things, versus the idea that we know very little and our understanding is very crude, missing the point entirely about the nature of our situation in being. Conversation waxed hot and heavy. Ev, Dennis, and I, passionate defenders of the latter view, Vanessa and Dave insisting on a psychological reductionist approach to the unusual events. ideology forgotten, they then denounced the passion of our commitment as obsession, and we responded by saying that they repressed the real power of the unconscious, and that if they were with us trying to vindicate some behaviorist, materialist view of man, then they would be in for a surprise, and so on. Tension had simmered under the surface for weeks, and the life of an expedition is full of stress and aggravated difference. But I believe that the real point of tension even then was the sense of something in the mushroom experience that was pulling everyone toward it, or at least precipitating a situation where one had to decide whether to go deeper into a dimension whose outline ahead of us could not be seen. Each trip was a learning experience with an unexpected conclusion. The three of us were delighted, psychedelic, ready to strip down and climb into the alchemical fountain and take the measure of the thing from the inside. Call it Faustian, call it obsessed, that was our position.
Friday, October 6, 2000. 7 a.m. Walking along Newman Road, Malden Mass. Drizzly Day. Pardon. A drizzly day. Alright, well, I came home last night, and among the few things that I accomplished, very few things, I sent an email to, I guess, 20 to 30 people, saying I'm moving to San Francisco by September 2002, which I was talking about on this machine last night. I did it purposefully to elicit the responses that will elicit. Some people know, some people don't know. There's all manner of thinking. So, sorry about that. Some will respond, some won't. Most will. In one way or another. So now that we've done this thing, not so much the emails made the decision, and refined the decision. That's really more what I've done. There's this middle stage of getting a different job and moving from Malden to some other city in Boston. But I've eliminated that. I think it's pointless. Why divert energy to an intermediate step when everything can be about now and when I move? And closing the gap, but also preparing. See, preparing is the key thing, because if preparing's done right, it means that between now and then is not all about then, it's as much about now as it is about then. I have this thing I want to do, this goal I want to enact, but I'm not ready to do it. So I have to raise the quality of things in my life in order to be ready to do it. Job, money, content. I've said that before. So, being able to say to people what I specifically wish to do is a way of soliciting their help and more of their help. If I say West Coast, it's West Coast. If I say San Francisco, it's a specific place that one is either been or not, that one knows stuff about or doesn't. And the fact that it's since September 2002, I'm not frantic in the way that I often am about everything. But I don't want to be frantic about this. Too big. Turning back is too unlikely once I've done it. I can't turn back. Once I go, I'm gone. Except in the visiting sense. And once I'm there, I'm there. Which is just important. My life always seems to be about transitions. It's partly my own way, my own personality, whatever. Good. But I've been thinking about this stuff. Job, home, family, all these kind of things. I've been thinking about them for a long time. There's nothing new here. Really. I'm committing to San Francisco, I guess, in a way. It's an ideal, it's an idea. To do with an idea I've often thought about, which is where one is situated has a lot to do with where what one perceives and how. I feel like I'm situated in the wrong place, so I don't trust my vantage point to tell me the things that I want to know, tell me about them. I don't trust it to be an environment that provides what I need. So. This belief has grown up in me that my vantage point out west would be much better. I don't know this to be true, but when I was in Connecticut, I felt my vantage point would be better from Boston, and it has been. But I want more. And I'm going to find more. And I'm going to look San Francisco. And I'm probably going to wish I was 20 years younger when I get there. But I'm not. And in some ways, it's good that I'm not. Because I'm sure out there, it's just as full of hustlers as back here, just different kinds of hustlers. And I'm probably hustleable still in some ways, but not in every way. Not as much as 20 years ago, that's what I'd like to say. I've lost things from the way it was then, but I gained a certain worldliness that I think is better than worse to have. By the way, it's Friday. Yay! Could be thinking about job hunting immediately or not so immediately. Or what I could do is post my resume out on the internet and see what happens. I figure that sooner or later something will come up. So I've got to read Joe's book tonight. Thing that happens with it on my end. This is not going to be easy, but I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do it alone this time, because I don't have to. Back in 91, I didn't know anybody, outside of Central Connecticut. I didn't know a soul. The truth is, I don't even know how I made it up here. I think it was just it's magical that I did. I'm here, not there, but I knew that I had to go. And I feel that same kind of thing now, I think. I mean, I do, and I'm trusting that it's real. But I'm also moving to a real place, so to remember. I made Boston my wife. I'm not doing that again. It's funny, I have these pangs of I'm going to miss here. won't. It's more sentiment or memories that spread across a lot of years, but they don't add up to a happy life on a daily basis. They mostly add up to me being alone, or in the spaces in between. Arrange a good situation and come back Eastern as necessary. Which I would expect to be once every few months. I didn't bring my umbrella. That was a real stupid thing to do. Anyway, half a block from the T station, I've set enough for now, and I guess that's it. So, more later. Alright, later the same day, day being Friday, October 6, 2000. 8:22 p.m. now. Left the T station. Stepping onto Charles Street. Trying to get all my shit in order. I'm looking for my symbiote. What a word. Symbiota? I'm not sure what the word would be. It's a combination of a person, a place, and an activity. Sort of a noun, verb, adjective thing, kind of. Sort of. Or noun verb. Someone to love, something to do, something to look forward to. A friend of Jerry said that to him a long time ago, and that has some ring to it. Symbiote. Symbiosis. I was thinking about the word soulmate. And for some reason, it doesn't work for me. And I'm not sure why it doesn't work. Strange. It should work. I guess it seems passive in some way. So you find that person and there you are. And I know that's not how it's meant. That's not how it works. But it seems to me soulmate, like home, is a verb, not a noun. It's as though the person links with you along the way. But you've already been figuring it out. That sounds weird. I'm not really even sure what that means. On a more mundane level, I'm about to duck behind a dumpster and take a piss. Always a delightful thing to do. Anthony's packed again tonight. It's funny.
Daniel X with Commander Cube.
After Dennis had moved to reside in the River House, there was no longer any need for Mike's sleepless watch at night. But the lack of a need to sleep prevailed. I actually looked forward each day to the time when everyone would retire and I would have before me long hours of delicious silent thought. Like the fox spirit of the I Ching who wanders eternally among the jeweled night grasses, I wandered in the pastures and on the trails around La Chorrera. Sometimes I would sit beneath the Ama-initialed tree for hours, watching vast mandalas of space and time turn and glisten around me. At times I would walk, long strides, nearly loping, head thrown back, gazing at the every-colored stars. Effortlessly, the deeper something that shared my mind connected up the constellations for me and showed me the enormous zodiacal machine that must have come to the ancients with the same suggestive force. Understanding, understanding in the form of immersion in millions of images of mankind in all times and places, struggling with the insoluble enigma of being and human destiny. It was during those velvet, star-strewn jungle nights that I felt closest to understanding the tripartite mystery of the Philosopher's Stone, the UFO, and the human soul. There is something human that transcends the individual and that transcends life and death as well. It has will, motive, and enormous power. Under certain conditions, the manipulative power of consciousness moves beyond the body and into the world. The world then obeys the will of consciousness to the degree that the inertia of pre-existing physical laws can be overcome. This inertia is overcome by consciousness determining the outcome of the normally random microphysical events. Over time, the deflection of microphysical events from randomness is cumulative, so that eventually the effects of such deflections are to shift the course of events in larger physical systems as well. Therefore, the greater the amount of time consciousness has in which to make its effects felt, the greater the possibility becomes that the willed end will come to pass, as subtle pressure toward a given end accomplishes the series of micro-deviations eventuating in a non-random and anti-entropic situation. the secret, in short, of falling in love. Consciousness works the same way within the brain, but there matter and energy are in a more unbound and dynamic state than throughout the rest of nature. It is easy for consciousness to direct the electrical flow in the central nervous system, though we have no idea how this is done. It is less easy for it to move not electrons, but whole atomic systems spread far and wide in time and space. This may explain why it is easier to form a thought, but having one's wishes come true takes longer.
All right, it's now 3:07 p.m. I have arrived with all my stuff. Sodas, notebooks, cassettes, turn on the Dreamline radio station on the ad radio, Dreamline Jazz radio station. So today I did my radio show with Ins With In, my primary radio show, at about 8 in the morning. To put into the schedule tonight, as usual, spot I recorded, which is something I don't do very often, except if I need to have more of the day. I'd rather do it live in its spot, wherever it happens to be on the schedule, but occasionally I need to get done what I consider ahead of time, which means essentially I do the same show, but I just do it earlier. I record it, and then I put the recording in the spot where my show belongs, which is how most shows, in fact, all the other shows on Spirit Plants Radio are like that. They are pre-recorded shows, they're not live shows. Except for mine. Mine being live is a carryover from the early days of Spirit Plants Radio. First, I don't know, first several years when it was all live. The radio station was built by an online community with forums and a chat. An extension of that was having a radio stream that they could share, do shows. I don't think it was done, it wasn't done in a way that if it had stopped happening after a while, anybody would know that about, quite honestly. But my show, I had far more of a commitment to. I'd already been doing it for 3 years. And so when I arrived to Spirit Plants Radio, as it being there, I was arriving with a ready-made product that I wanted to forward into the larger concern, which I did. And for a while, there was one show of a number of them. Then over the course of the years, it became the only show left. And then in, it was 2008 that the guy who was hosting the station online, he said, no, I'm not doing this anymore. So I took it over. I went from just hosting the show to being a station manager. And I built out the rest from there. And I decided that because of my experiences in those years where I'd gone from a number of shows to few to one, that I didn't want to depend on other people doing shows live. That seemed foolish. I wanted a schedule, and while I didn't want people to have to feel committed to doing a show every week, I didn't want to at the same time have holes in the schedule waiting on people. It just doesn't work best that way. So everybody else's shows on that basis are pre-recorded, and I make sure they get on and do all the promotion and everything, the website and whatnot. My show is live. It's always been live, and the show itself is essentially a stream of a show, and then what remains thereafter is a recording of the show, which in recent years I've taken to doing more and more post-production work on to make sure it actually is as good as it can be for the archives. So, I don't know if I need to say that. I don't know if I said that before on this in the series, probably I have. It's funny that this Voice Journal series connects now and then in one way via my radio show. I used Voice Journal passages from it back then. I recorded my show on the little machine at the time. You know, the two are mixed up together nicely, which is neat. And so the point of this was to have the whole day write the finale of the Bags of News story I've been writing for months now, the current one. It got slowed because we decided to have lunch and watch the next episode of Search Party, a TV show you've been following for several years. It was the third to last show of the series, and it was a show that had gotten very crazy as it went on, and I decided we need to watch the last, the third to last, the second to last, and last, so we did. It wasn't that much of an investment in extra time. We read a little bit online with the interviews with the creators about what all they thought about what they've done, why, and all that. It's a really good show, Search Party. It started on TBS, I think about 2016, and it somehow hung around season after season, and eventually moved to, I don't know what it's called, HBO Max, I think. It's like some kind of streaming platform, whatever those are. But it hung around for 5 full years, and they told a full story, and the story got crazier as it went along, and they did a good job, end to end. It's a great show, very funny, sweet, satiric. It's just a fun show. It's a classic. It's a classic that ended its run this year. And they did a great job. They did a great job, the cast and the writers and directors and everything. They did a fantastic job. And I would recommend that show to anyone. It's very addictive. It's addicting. It's also a show that evolves over time. Just its premise evolves over time. I think I could only say to someone, if I was trying to describe it, I would say it's the story of a woman named Dorothy and her three dear friends. I think that would be they set out to solve the mystery, and the show goes from there. And it was fun. It was fun to watch it end to end. We watched the first several seasons a couple of times, and then we watched the fourth, and then we watched the fifth, and we were watching it at lunchtime, which was fine. But the ending felt like a Saturday high as fuck kind of way to send it all out there, and it was. So that's one thing to talk about. Since this tape is gonna flip, it's gonna click off any second now. I wanna talk about Burning Man for a moment. I guess it's not gonna make sense. Set there.
Friends down in the street, hollering up me, come on down and be a man. But I can't always be, they expect for me, I'm happy right here where I am. What's rising from below, who well and one knows, if my troubles linger yet. They say it's been so long since everything went wrong. I'm up here trying to forget. I won't come down from here with all those people near. It seems that no one understands. I'm flying high today. I'd like to stay that way. You can all put down your helping hand. We'll be right back.
down from there, with all those people there, it seems that no one understands. I'm flying high today, I'd like to stay that way, you can all put down your helping hand.
They sit on needles and pins, but I won't let none of them in, except the man who brings my cigarettes. Pinned up in ball of feet, I've got the only key, I won't come down that you can bet.
$10,000. All right, running in 2022. What I don't understand about Burning Man, and this has been a changing thing for them over the time too, but that it's become much more of a rather than tickets to the public, who shows up does. It's become much more insular in a way. It's, there's now levels of effort that precede even showing up in the desert and being in the desert for a week, which is enough of a challenge. Now, much more the stress is on being part of a theme camp and getting tickets through the theme camp. It's like levels of structure that seem to require more than the commitment of buying a ticket 6 months in advance. Now it's like you've got to be part of a theme camp. It's just a level of commitment and bureaucracy or something, I really don't know, but it's become a thing. It's become a real serious thing, and it's something I didn't really understand. When I first started going, the real committed bought their tickets when tickets went on sale in the spring, and then the less committed bought their tickets as the months went on and the tickets went up in price, and so your commitment was based upon when you bought your ticket. That's it. That's all. It got harder to get them, and they got more expensive. Now it's not as simple as that. You've got to be, if you're going to get a ticket, just get a ticket, it's going to be hard, because the general admission, main sale, anybody, ponies up the money, tickets are a far smaller percentage of the tickets for sale than they used to be. Now it's much more... You have to be part of a theme camp, which is, it could be anything. Back when theme camps were kind of like a big deal, and most people didn't camp in theme camps unless they happened to want to be part of it or were part of it, somehow came into it. It wasn't a requirement. It wasn't something that was like, do this or don't go. But it's become much more like that. So I've been running this too slowly for my own benefit, and I think I'm slowly getting there, understanding it and all. It's aggravating. Because it's no longer just get a ticket, it's like, it becomes more like, much more like, you have to be, like, with other people, you have to get to know them, you have to do all this stuff, and you're doing it all online. I mean, I don't know. So I've been working on that. That's not very specific. I have been part, so far, trying to be part of a thing called a multicultural people of color neighborhood. The only color I have in my skin is like Caucasian, and so this neighborhood is geared toward people of color who would have been there. Okay, fine. It never used to be that there were any people of color Burning Man, which I always thought was a lack. Deficit. It just seemed like I'm always up behind the more various, the merrier and better. But now it's like the point is being forced. So I've been trying to sort of make my way into that, and it's like I think at this point I'm going to register Cassie and Maya's project, No Borders Free Bookstore, as a theme camp with Burning Man. and then it's going to be Haynes Camp as part of this neighborhood. And this neighborhood apparently is a neighborhood of multiple camps, and there's a desire to get everybody who joins in tickets. Fine. Okay. That's aggravating. I'm willing to go with it. I'm like, that's what it takes to get tickets. Fine. But then I start thinking, like, in this past week, about all this COVID stuff that hasn't gone away. And that's what really is troubling me, is that, like, I was at my workplace for just a couple of days, and I was at meetings where people were mostly not masked, and whole bunches of them got tested positive for COVID. And I was masked up, and I didn't, thank goodness. Weirdly, I wasn't feeling well for a couple of days after, but I did the home tests, I did the tests as I was leaving the workplace. Everything showed negative, so good, whatever. But I'm just thinking about, like August isn't that far from now, and if COVID's not over, then the whole thing's still a risk. I mean, does one wear a mask the whole time? I mean, what are the protocols you follow in a pandemic era at an outdoor festival, camping festival? I mean, to be safe. I just don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I'm not knowing how to go about all this. It seems just complex, and I wish I felt more certainty about any of it, but I'm not saying that anybody does. You know, it seems like every familiar move one makes has to be double-checked, or triple-checked, and even then you're not sure. I love sitting around a long table in a meeting room with my colleagues, most of whom I'd never spent any person in-person time with, especially since I've become full-time now. And it was awesome. It was fantastic. It was just like, when I was talking with them in small numbers and larger numbers during the course of the couple of days I was there, it was just, it felt so good. I like those guys. I mean, they're mostly guys, some of them are women, but I like them all. I like them all. They're good people. And weirdly, I know them all well, but only online. And having a chance to be in the same room with them and share air is, you know, ordinarily, that's a good thing. That's how people become more intimate, but it turns out share air in this case is like a hazard. If you do too much of it, don't have a mask on. I just don't even know. I don't even know. It's like, I don't know how to operate safely without essentially never going anywhere and never doing anything. So I really don't know. I don't know if I'm going to Bunny Mills or Bessie. I don't know. My thought is to keep aware of the trends in the pandemic. See if we actually get tickets, and sort of let the path unfold. But COVID is not something to fuck with. That's what I want to say more than anything else. It's not something to fuck with. It's not well known. It's dangerous. It's dangerous at any level. It's just not a good thing to get. And so, I just don't know. I have to choose safety, and I have to decide if Burning Man this year qualifies or not. We're supposed to go visit Cassie's folks in May. I don't even know if that qualifies. She got tickets that are fully reschedulable. So the good thing is that aside from that, those couple of days at my work place, fully masked, she goes into work once a week masked. When the vaccines are coming to play again, we'll get them. But it's just like every public situation is a risk. It's just undeniable. It's a risk. And it's hard to live like that. It's hard to live like that. It's hard to think of COVID as being something that, according to what I heard and read and stuff, it's like, once you get it, it's not like it necessarily comes and goes and you're done. It can linger. Effects of it can linger. And so, when you have a cold, you go through ravages of cold, it sucks for several days, you recover, and then you're done. You move on. But this shit sounds different, and that makes it scarier. So I'm sort of balancing that with the pain in the ass fucking aggravation of getting tickets. I mean, it's just pain in the ass. It's a pain in the ass to get tickets. I would like it if Cassie and I got tickets that didn't require us to be in a neighborhood or a village or anything like that. And if we did, and we camped in, there's like an open area of camping. If we did that, which would be nice. But then there's where do we put the bookstore? I mean, honestly, I don't know. I Center Camp doesn't have coffee anymore. I don't know how much they're locked down in terms of like stuff. I can't get a hold of people to tell me what is going on with Center Camp. What I'm going to do this coming week is I'm going to fill out the theme camp application and see if that then brings some action. Hopefully what that will do is make it so that we're more likely to get tickets as part of this neighborhood we're going to be affiliated with, on the one hand. And on the other hand, it might get some action in terms of Center Camp being bookstore space. So I think I'm being impatient. I think COVID is harassing me. I think not having been in so many years and having to deal with these new rules and learning them slowly, feeling like stumbling and clumsy out of the gate about all this shit. It's like at some point, if it all goes well, Cassie and I will be walking on the quiet. We'll be looking around and they'll be burning. And it will look pretty much as it always did because there's not a lot of variation that there can be. Tents, artwork. You're surrounded by desert. In the day it's hot, at night it's cold. There's some things that have nothing to do with Burning Man that are true about Black Rock Desert. But to get to that familiar effect, it's a series of steps in an elongated song like this. And I'm just trying to show myself game and patient enough to handle it with a sense of humor, an open mind, you know, a willing heart, trying to keep focused on why the fuck I'm bothering. I want to go back. I want to see what it feels like after all these years. I've missed it. I miss being there. Burning Man is, I think, the closest thing I've ever come to a shared religion with anybody, or shared religious group kind of thing that was beyond me that I joined into. Not a religion, but it's a something. It has a lot of ideals I like and share. And so I miss being part of it. The one thing I've been reminding myself about, and every time I think this helps, is that, I'm going to test this out. Recording well enough. Okay, so two things. One, Cassie and I have been to this event many times. We haven't been in some years, but we have been many, many times. There are people going this year we've never been. For them, it's all new. And in some ways, I envy them because it'll be a spectacular experience for them. But also, when you've gone before, you know the wonders ahead of you and you know how to navigate them with a little more ability and appreciation. Because you're not so overwhelmed. Yes, it's true. Yes, it exists. Yes, it's hard work. And it's magic. All those things. And our project is valid. I send people links to the No Borders Bookstore, the website at scripturefest.com, just to give a little taste. It's just a little taste. Some photos and a zip file of the burning of books. But it's like, yes, this project exists. It's not something that like we're coming up with on the fly. It's a valid project that is looking to resume. So, and I've been to 11 burning ends in one regional. On top of that, I've been to 12 burnings. So, I have to keep reminding myself that this is a mature project versus a lot of the other projects around here that are not. And if I say I want a theme camp, if I can apply for a theme camp status for this in order to get us tickets, fine. It's a theme camp. It has a theme. It's a bookstore. And I can show you what the bookstore looks like with photos. But I have to remind myself of that. Like, and even beyond that, it's like this. Cassie and I and our project, we bring something of value to the firm that is unique. Like a lot of other people, we bring our little unique fix to Black Duck City that adds to it, makes it better. And so, I don't want to go on bended knees to anybody. I don't want to reinvent our bookstore for anybody else's purposes, just because they've never heard of it and they have their own ideas. It's like, fine, see them on yourself. I'm trying to be flexible about it, but ultimately, like, what I would say is, we want tickets, we want to get there, we want to do our bookstore, we want to appreciate all the art, we want to have experiences, I mean, we want to contribute. We have, and we will. And there's nothing I'm bending knee to anybody about any of that. As I learn more of the process, I'm now familiar with it. I get it. I understand. It's not hard, it's just different. And part of my slowness is just not liking it. Like, what? I can't get just a fucking ticket and go. That just aggravates me, but that seems to be the direction. At least one. So, I'm trying to, like with everything in my life, talk to people eye to eye. Not up, not down. Just level. I don't see anyone better, I don't see anyone worse. People are different, they're unique. And I'm fine with that. I'm not going to Burning Man to apologize to anybody for anything. I'm not hoping for nothing. I'm trying to want to go to this event. I want to go to this event because it matters a lot to me. And I want to be part of it. I want to do it safely and successfully. Let's see how it goes. And this may be the game. This may be like, went, enjoyed, decided that enough was enough. Wished it out. It certainly could. I'm allowing that possibility. I think I probably was allowing it at that point until it finally became in 2009 and it wasn't the when. But I'm gonna allow it. Whatever happens at it to determine what I think about it thereafter. I'm not going to presume ahead of time. I mean, I just want to go and see everything. I know that there's not like one person I can see things to, or one moment where it can all sum up, but it's like, I feel like us going is a way of us showing our appreciation. Effort we have to make to get there is, in a way, part of us showing gratitude for what we're trying to get to. We value it. We'll make the effort. Whether it happens again, I don't know. Plus, we can. That train sounds like it's overhead, which it's not. It's beyond the back fence of this house, but it definitely sounds close. Anyway, I don't see any limitations on being able to go. Other than the hoops to jump. And the fact that I'm jumping them all over. I would much rather be focusing purely on project, bookstore, but I'm having to focus on larger things of the bookstore there. It's very weird. And I think as long as it continues to seem like it's going to happen, I'll continue to pursue it. I mean, I've set a path. I think there's still some options along the way. We may just simply score 2 tickets the old-fashioned way. I don't know if that would be an advantage or not. I really don't know. I don't know if I feel attached to this multicultural persons of color neighborhood. I really don't know. I don't know what that adds up to. I do know that I think I need to get better at saying Cassie and I have a bookstore. We intend the bookstore to be at Center Hill. It's not going to be in this neighborhood itself. It's going to be at Center Hill. But we want to camp with the people in this neighborhood, and we want to offer our help in ways we can to other people's projects. And I think that probably is the best way to say it. We're willing to help. We have our theme camp. It's going to set up at Santa Camp, is our intention. But we're willing to help with other people doing the thing as well. To me, it's clumsy and amateurish and uncertain, but maybe as time goes on, I'll be better at making maneuvers and saying the right things and wending the paths that need to be wended in a better way. Right now, I don't feel like very certain, fortunately. Which is funny, because by the time I've gone to a brain 11 times, I had the thing down cold. Maybe this is humbling. Maybe that's what this comes down to. I didn't go for all these years, and returning turns out to be not such an easy thing to do. It was never really, honestly, a matter of anybody in the sense. We went because we wanted to, but we never really were part of anything larger that went looking for us. You get ready to come, you have to you get ready to bring a book. None of that really. Not much. Maybe not nothing, but nothing. So maybe it's humbling to realize that deciding to go back is not as simple a matter as committing to it for all the usual familiar things it takes to do it, but also realizing that it's changed. And it's a matter of adapting to these new rules or staying back. Or going elsewhere. I guess in conclusion, I could keep pursuing this, but if it doesn't work out this year, for all these various reasons or others, if it just doesn't work out, then I'm not gonna be torn off and broken by it. Doesn't great. Then I figure I'd just go be an expert. For now, I'm just going to be in my mind. Okay, I've rambled on this 20.
Sanyo X Wing Commander Q.
36 X Wing Commander Q.
Sanyo X Wing Commander Q. Strange.
And spirit and already.
的恐慌显著的威力下排阵亡。
At the level of the individual, thus freeing one to evolve independently. Yet from it all I have learned that there is no religious revelation more satisfying than the hard-won fruits of simple understanding. And there is no liberation to compare with freeing oneself from the illusions and delusions of the age in which one lives. I reached these conclusions through my use and familiarity with psilocybin and other psychedelic drugs. They immerse their user in the world of the Oversoul and make one privileged to at least a part of its mechanics of operation. They allow a private dialogue with the Oversoul that is outside the context of the struggle between science and revelation, that leaves no choice between the alienation of the rationalist and the tired formulas of the fanatic believer. Psychedelic drugs hold out the possibility of healing the breach between science and morality at the level of the individual, thus freeing one to evolve independent of the chaos and transformation the UFOs may soon bring to humanity.
Spending a pleasant afternoon under the stars.